Go for it, Terry.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the NLA Courtroom Observers Conference Call for September 20th, 2017. So I guess you can take it away, Bob. You wanted to talk a little bit about jury nullification?
Well, yeah. I was sitting here thinking about what we needed to do. There's only so much we can talk about when it comes to courtroom observing. And then there's a lot of individual stuff that can be done by everyone as far as learning the Constitution and common law, civics, you might say. And, of course, going into our website and reading the information that's available on our website is important. Well, one of the other things that's extremely important for those who may be called in as a jurist or, you know, is there anybody here that has been on a jury? Well,
I supposed to go on. I am Valdi from Florida.
Right.
But the hurricane postponed it.
Well,
so there was
you
no
haven't
call for
been
me.
Here yet.
I was looking forward.
Yeah. Well, I was called probably 6 months or so ago. I was told to report in for duty on a grand jury. But just a few days before I was to report, I received a letter canceling my duty. My history preceded me, and they decided they didn't want me on a jury. However, there's a good chance that many of you will be called to be on a jury. And being on a jury carries a big responsibility, and it's very important, just like being a courtroom observer is. Because if you know what your duties of, you know, as a jurist is, you can have a big impact. Just like being a courtroom observer, you can have a big impact. And probably the most important things that you need to know, and it would be a good idea to add this to your resume, is to learn about, you know, because the courts in this day and age, they don't want you to know about jury nullification. And they try to make you understand, if they even have to mention it, they try to make you understand that that it's something different than what it really is. They've been doing that in the courts in Portland and down in Nevada with our patriots. However, many of our patriot supporters have adopted teaching jury nullification to the jury, and the way they do it is they made up t-shirts with jury nullification on them so that the jury, when they came in the mornings or left at night, they would see jury nullification. And you can bet many of them went home and opened up the computer and checked it out. You see, the jury not only is judging the facts of the case, but they are to judge the law that was used in the arrest. Because often, the law that was used may not be completely constitutional, or it may not really apply to the crime that was committed. And so if you know, you know, and if you consider the crime and consider the law and you hear the facts of the case, you may not agree with these people even being arrested under that specific law. Well, you have every right to vote against the prosecution. And if even just one of you votes no on prosecution, and everybody else votes yes, guilty, then you have a hung jury. And if they, if it's done properly, you have nullified the jury. And you've allowed these people to go free. However, that's not working in Nevada. They decide to, they keep deciding to retry them rather than saying, okay, hung jury, it's done. But at least if you stand your ground and refuse to change your decision, you are providing justice in the court. Now, maybe a person is guilty and you know he's guilty. But if the law that he was arrested under if it's wrong, then you must say no. If the facts, if anything about the court procedure is wrong, such as like they did in Nevada with the not allowing the defense to talk about any of the important things that that could free them, and you realize that's what they're doing, then the jury should vote not guilty. Simply because they had no due process and they had, and they weren't allowed to put on a defense, and so it was unconstitutional. Because everybody who is accused of a crime must be afforded a defense and be able to present their evidence, all of their evidence, not just a part of it. The judge should not be deciding what they can or cannot. If they have evidence that they want to present, then it must be allowed. And so I ask everyone to look into jury nullification and gain some knowledge on it. Put that in your resume with what you learn about courtroom observing. Because everybody is, and it should be an honor to serve on a jury. You should not be trying to get out of it. Because serving on a jury allows you to maybe correct something that's wrong. and to uphold justice. So, I was just thinking about that today, and I thought it worthwhile to bring up. And it's something Val says he's got jury duty coming up, something for him to think about and to, you know, pay attention to what's happening in court. And if it's not a fair trial, if it's unconstitutional proceedings, then he has that right to give a not guilty verdict.
Yes, now, Robert, this is Val again. Before I forget, I'm pretty familiar with the Julie nullification. There is the outfit, I think, in the Helena, Montana. They call it Fully Informed Jury Association, I believe. I was with them for a long, long time. I support them, you know, little heroes there. They usually send you the calendar with the most important cases on the issue. And they still exist because they are on the web now. They used to be, you know, they send you the pamphlets. And that's, you know, everybody should know that. I don't need the pamphlets anymore. I know, you know, like you said, being the court, observing the court, and then, you know, just don't signal to anybody what you know, on which side you are, and then if you have a chance, just do the justice.
Right.
And also, like I mentioned, I think, a couple of weeks ago, don't overlook the Article 6. Article 6, our Constitution for the United States government says, then the accused have the right to have the compulsory process for obtaining witness in his favor. In Bible, they used to say that the one witness cannot send you, they cannot find you guilty. There must be two. Here, I did not hear much this point, obtaining witness in his favor. The compulsory process for obtaining, as much as to have an assistance of the counsel for his defense. So this is another area which should be explored. And since I am here, let me tell you, I had a little story. There is relating to the court, but I wasn't in the court, actually. I won the case not being in the court. There were the days when I was driving the 18-wheeler, and I was in the California heading north on Highway 5 toward the Napa Valley, and the cop was hiding behind the bridge, and he stopped me. Give me a ticket, $450. So I took this ticket, look at it in the back, and there was nice information over there that I can plead over the mail. I went on internet when I get home, printed exactly what the cop wrote, and I got two beautiful cases. One case said that speed limit is the fiction, is the imaginary thing. So I made the notation. Second court case was similar, and they both were the California cases. So I, on the one page of paper, write it down exactly what I did, what was the weather, what I was doing, what lane I was, etc., etc. I paid the $550 and wait for the judge to decide. And then I receive back my $450, and judge says I am not guilty. That was done by the little research, nothing else. And a lot of stuff is out there, and I was so amazed, because those days, the California has the financial trouble, financial crisis. And I said, for sure they're not going to let me win, but they did. So that's the one story. Second story, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about that non-judicial foreclosures. I went on internet and I found some very interesting thing. In the United States, there are some states which conduct judicial foreclosures and some states which conduct non-judicial foreclosures. What is the difference? Generally, states that use mortgage for purchase of real property conduct judicial foreclosure. States that use deeds of trust conduct for purchasing real property use non-judicial foreclosure. So I didn't research what is the difference between two, but I called the Attorney General of Florida and I asked, you know, I have this information, which she verified is that's true, that Florida is judicial the foreclosure state. She said, yes, it is. So you know what? Right now, we know how to approach this issue without, claiming that everybody must use the judicial foreclosure. Keep it in mind, there is one of the biggest law in the United States is right of the contract. And right of the contract is outside of legislature. They cannot mess up this because it is between the two people. And this is probably one of the biggest laws, biggest rights we have. So first thing, somebody miss the payment and start the chain of events start piling up. First, I think people should get checked out what kind of form of the payments they use for purchasing real property, either is mortgage or deeds of trust. I don't know what the difference is, but I will find out eventually. So that's what I have to say today, tonight.
Thank you, Sal. Anybody have any comments on any of that?
Well, I guess I don't fully understand what he said, but I know he's talking about the jury for sure. But I know I just had a jury trial, and y'all mentioned that said that they're told to vote on the law and only the law. And basically what happened at the end of the trial for a registration ticket, one of the jurors walked up to me and shook my hand on the way out and told me they forced him to change his not guilty plea or not guilty decision. Being that I've been on a jury before, I know how they do it. I had the same thing happen to me when I was a juror. If you do vote not guilty, they come in and basically tell you you have to change it. With that being said, there's got to be something we can do to get in there and, for one, file charges on them, get the decision overturned, and dismissed with prejudice due to jury tampering. Because that's what it is jury tampering. They're going in there and convincing the jurors to plead guilty even if they decide they don't want to. And it's basically forced. It was
that
forced
is tampering.
It was forced upon me, even though it was a mock trial with the one I was on. But then the one that I was the defendant in recently, the juror came up to me, straight out told me, he shook my hand and he said, hey, you know, good luck, I'm sorry, but they forced me to change my not guilty to guilty. And so I didn't know what to do after that. I tried to stand up and tell the judge, and the judge said, too late, we're off the record, it's over.
Now, what I would have done would have been to have that jurist write an affidavit to that, testifying to that fact that they made him change his vote, and then bring suit against the court.
Yeah, that's the next step, is to bring suit, to file the judicial complaint and bring a suit against the court. And another person was telling me that he sued the insurance company, because I guess all of these attorneys and judges have an insurance company backing them. And then I look it up and I find out there is a large insurance company for all these prosecutors and attorneys and judges. And in every city and county has a different one.
Yes.
And he said it's best to go file a claim against them, because you can get more money out of the claim than you would suing the actual city or state, because the city and state tort laws have minimal amounts that you can even sue for, if you even win, because then you're going back to their court systems anyway, so they're not going to rule in your favor anyway.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is what I'm trying to tell people, is they cannot force you to change your vote, not legally, and so. But they're going to try.
Yeah.
You need to know that you can stand your ground and refuse to change it. A lot of people
don't know.
A lot of people don't know that. And they're court officials. They probably know more than I do. So, all right, I have to change. But no, you don't. They don't realize that they are the people, and the people have the power, and that the elected or appointed officials are your servant. And so if they know the Constitution, if they know civics, if they know the procedures, then they know that they can refuse.
That's the problem, they don't. This jury,
right.
I could tell very clearly, was just, they were all, every time I spoke anything about the Constitution, they looked at me like a deer in the headlights. They had no idea what I was talking about.
Well, that's true, and that's because of the dumbed down that has been done for so many years. They've been working to dumb everybody down, not teaching the Constitution, not requiring the knowledge of it, and, doing a lot of different things to make sure that people are ignorant of the truth. And so that's why I felt that it important to bring that situation up today. It's just we as courtroom observers, we are in a position to where we're going to run into people, and we have a chance to discuss things with them. And if we have the knowledge of things that are important, we should convey that to other people. We should be teachers. And so, to me, it's very important that we know what we're doing and very knowledgeable about it, to where we can talk to other people and make them knowledgeable on the subject. So, if we can help people understand jury nullification, that's also helping to take back the courts. That's helping to stop the corruption, just like the courtroom observing. if you're a jury, if you're a jurist, you can make a big difference. If you're a courtroom observer, you make a big difference. Both can have a great impact. And we've seen that both in Oregon and in Nevada with our Patriots, because in Portland, we handed out jury nullification pamphlets to everybody entering the court. They even went so far as to arrest one of our people handing out these pamphlets.
Mm.
However, when they took him into the sheriff to lock up, he run him out and told the guy, get out of here. We don't want you.
Huh.
And so it backfired on the feds on that one. But also in Nevada, they started talking to everybody on the street about jury nullification. They wore those T-shirts to make sure they got the word to the jury. Now, they got to where they forced the supporters to cover up those T-shirts before they were allowed in the courtroom. But, also illegal.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I can't believe, that's the other problem. They're being allowed to get away with this nonsense.
But you got to know that the jury, even though they come in a back door, side door or something, they saw these people wearing these T-shirts, and then they saw them in the courtroom and seeing that they either did not have the T-shirt on or they had them covered up, they had to know. They had to put two and two together and figure it out that these people were being forced to cover them up or take them off. And so, of course, that made them curious, even more curious about jury nullification. So supporters were using everything that they did against them.
There's got to be a right for the defendant to speak to talk to the jurors afterwards and find out if they were coerced. And if they were coerced, the juror should be able to, write the courts or call the courts or whatever it may be. Like a written statement is probably better, and say, hey, this is what happened. I was forced to do this. And then the defendant will be able to write in with them and say, hey, this juror told me, I basically coerced him. This needs to be a mistrial, dismissed, extreme prejudice. Not only that, but the persons involved in the coercion need to be tried themselves.
Absolutely. And we need to know our rights. That's what it all boils down to. We need to know our rights. And what we found in these trials in Portland and Nevada is that many times after the trial, the jury or some of the jurors do come back and talk to the supporters and tell them what went on.
Yeah. Well, we got to start taking that and returning that to the courts and taking it to higher courts, take it to Supreme, wherever we got to take it, somewhere, some other authority, some other.
If you file a case in the federal court.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to have to do on mine, too. I was trying to go through, because mine was in the municipal court, simply registration. And, I convinced the jury that it was a violation of my constitutional rights to force me to register my private property, and it was obvious they were on my side. It was clear at the end when the one told me he was forced to change his vote, And the rest wouldn't, they had their head down and wouldn't even look at me and walk out of the courtroom. You could tell they were all ashamed. They were back there for a long time. And then I see the prosecutor jump up and run to the back. And as soon as he comes back, all of a sudden they have a decision. So I'm thinking to myself, they let that prosecutor go back there and talk to them. And he went back there and told them what they had to do.
Yep. Well, this last trial in Nevada, the jury vote was 11-1. And that one person, you know, it was not 11 for not guilty and one for guilty.
Wow.
And that one person caused, you know, a hung jury.
And of course, they didn't force him to change his vote.
No.
That's good, because it goes in their favor.
But the thing was, it was unanimous not guilty for two of the defendants. And on two, there was one of the defendants was found guilty on two charges, and the other one was found guilty on four charges. And so they decided they were going to have a retrial, and then here more recently they decided that they were going to combine those two defendants from the last trial in with the upcoming trial on the last group, the Bundy group. That ought to be interesting to see how that comes out.
Yeah, I've been following a little bit, but I thought that most of them had gotten a not guilty and were free. But I guess there's still some charges pending.
Yeah, they freed all four of them, but two of them have to come back and face another trial. So a third trial.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's a shame how many people are completely how many, the entire United States almost, as far as I know here in Austin, Texas, this liberal hellhole that it is. Every single one of them are misinformed on the Bundys. Every single one.
Right.
I think I'm one of the only few patriots here, and because we've all been forced to hide in the bushes because it's overrun by brainwashed zombie liberals, and still believe that I know his name. I'm sorry, my mind is from blank. They still believe the Bundy in the white truck, the older gentleman, they still believe that he was firing at the officers, and that's why they shot him.
Well, that wasn't a Bundy. That was Lavoie Finicum.
Lavoie Finicum, that's why. That's why I went blank. Yeah, and I remember seeing the video from inside the truck.
Yeah,
because they had posted that one, but they kept removing it from Facebook. But I was watching that video in shock. And, of course, every time I share it, I got banned from Facebook several times from sharing any of the Bundy stuff. And they kept banning my account for sharing it for 3 days at a time. I'd get banned. I'd come back. I'd do it again. They'd get banned for 3 days.
Yeah, well, we took those videos and had them, the NLA did, had them analyzed by experts. And found out a lot of information, provided that to Jeanette Finicum for her lawsuit and whatnot.
Sir, on your, this is Jim out in New Mexico. I remember Matt Drudge was on Alex Jones about a year ago, and he emphatically made the point that Americans are very, very sick in the mind people. And that's what's going on, you know. They're very messed up mentally about everything.
Well, they're, you know, they're easily led by the nose. But the reason they are is because they've been dumbed down.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we might say that they're sick because they don't try to learn, but really it's been a very, you know, the elitists, the people wanting a one world order, they've waged a very smart battle against us to dumb everyone down. And so in that way, we can't blame the people. But we must educate them.
I've had some that are open here in Austin. I've even liberals that have been open to listening to it. I have to be careful how I explain it. I have to make it clear that I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I'm not a racist. And I, you know, I even, you know, tell them, hey, I'm not a Trump supporter, just so they'll listen. Because you can't say that you're a Republican, a conservative, Trump supporter, or Christian, or any of that, because automatically they're not hearing anything you got to say.
Right.
So, you know, I'll tell them none of those things first, so that their mind stays partially open. And some of them take in the information and go home and research and come back and say, you know, I found this and I found that, and tell me more. And I give them a little more information each time. And then there's others that, you know, because I even have, you know, a couple pages of paperwork that I give some people. I say, here, read over this. It has a few Supreme Court cases, has a few constitutional, you know, excerpts in it. You know, it's not the entire thing, but just a little bit of information. You can take that, go research it, and find out more yourself. And there's one gentleman recently, I give him the papers, and he's looking at it, and he's looking up at me, and he's got this angry look on his face, making him angry. And I'm like, that seems to be making you mad. I'm not sure why. Is there something wrong? He says, well, this says anybody can do whatever they want, and there's run red lights and no speed limits, and there's nothing that can be done about it. And I said, well, show me where it says that, first of all, because I don't see those words. I put this together, and I know I didn't put that in there. And I said, everything that's in there is either from Black Law Dictionary or direct word-for-word excerpt from the Constitution itself with the information there. Go look at it yourself from the law library and compare it and make sure it's the exact same. And change any words, just put the information on the paper.
Well, it is true that we the people are above the Constitution, and we can live our life in the way that makes us happy, so long as we do not hurt anyone else in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might say that we can speed and that we can run red lights and all of that. And yes, we really can. However, you know, the chances are so great if you do that you're going to kill somebody, you're going to hurt somebody. And if you do, you're going to have to pay that penalty. So
yeah.
Why risk it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, and that's what a reasonable person would understand, but there's many that are not reasonable, and they've been convinced that the Constitution is what they have said to me should be written on toilet paper. I've heard terrible things about it. And,
yeah,
and every time I ask them, I say, well, then what's left? So if we get rid of the Constitution, then what's left? What gives you freedom after that? What makes you free? What do you use to protect yourself after that? And they say, well, what do you mean? I said, well, there's got to be something in place, because there's no Constitution saying, hey, this is what the government, this is what people are not allowed to do to us. This is our freedoms. If they impede on them, you know, they're violating law themselves. And this is what we use to protect ourselves. This is what we use to stop. You know, and the liberals are the worst ones, and I use this a lot. You know, you're anti-police, right? You think the police are bullies, and you think the police do whatever they want. And I said, you know why that happens? It's because they're not following the Constitution. Because they've convinced you, the liberals that don't like them, that you don't need the Constitution. So
well, that's what they
the people
want
that,
you to believe.
The people that hate the police most, you guys, you liberals, they've convinced you to get rid of the one thing that protects you
from them.
Right.
So you're stabbing yourself in the foot. So you're going through the police, but at the same time you're saying, but get rid of the one thing protecting you from the police. And then when that's gone, we can say, I told you so, but it's too late. Now we're all screwed.
Right.
And it's free reign, which it already pretty much is now, because even trying to use it in court, they every time I would stand up and say anything about it, the objection, he's misstating the law. Objection, irrelevant. How is the
right.
Constitution irrelevant? You know,
so,
of course it's relevant. My entire basis of this case is saying that my constitutional rights are being violated, and you're telling me my quote from the Constitution is irrelevant.
Well, the attorneys are not even taught the Constitution. And in the Patriot trials here in Portland, the Patriots said, we're going to base our defense on the Constitution. And the attorney said, okay. And they had open minds enough that they started studying the Constitution. And they seen how it helped them win the case. And so it converted some of the attorneys to learn more about the Constitution. Now, that was a good thing. Now, the judge ruled that they could not read from the Constitution nor the Bible.
Wow.
But they found ways to get it out there, what they needed to say. They found ways to get it out there over and over and over and got it to the jury against the wishes of the judge. In Nevada, man, there was hell to pay. They even mentioned the Constitution or Bible there.
It's mind-blowing that they're getting away with this, and it explains the attack on Christianity while they're convincing the world to get rid of it, because basically a lot of the cases that have been won in the past where the Constitution and the Bible were used to protect their inalienable rights. So
That's another point of why it's so important that we as courtroom observers and the possibility of us being jurists to know the Constitution and common law and be able to make, you know, judgment when, you know, especially as a jurist, if we know the truth, then we can render, you know, a decision on based on justice.
Yeah.
If we don't know it, then we might follow whatever they say.
Wow.
So
you got ticketed for expired registration, is that what your problem was?
Yeah. Yeah.
And can I ask why you didn't want registration? I think I know the answer, but
well, yeah, of course. Well, for one, it's my private property. It's a private automobile, and they like to call it a motor vehicle. And when you register it to the public, and it no longer becomes your private automobile. It's now registered with the city and the state. And my rights as a free American say I don't have to register my private property, and I refuse to do so. And it's been a year and a half, and that was one of five cops that stopped me. The rest of the cops didn't pursue it. This one particular cop decided he was going to go ahead and do it anyway. The rest of them, I still to this day for the last year and a half drive around with no license and no registration. And out of the five times I've been pulled over, I'm letting go every time once I start speaking and telling the police officer how they're violating my rights, and I'll let go. But this one... Boy, that's what's happening with this one now. Now that I just did the case last week, and of course they lied to the jurors and convinced them to change their not guilty plea, which is a not guilty verdict, which is outrageous.
Are you still under 30 days?
Yes, yeah. I'm working on the appeals and the judicial. It's hard to find. I'm going through all the tons of information on how to make sure the appeal is proper, because I don't want them denying it based off, you know, small discrepancies, which is what they like to do. So I've been
They do, but you need to understand that under common law, there are no statutes of limitation.
Yeah, I'm slightly aware of that. I don't know all the details on it, but I know
look up under USC, U.S. Code 5, and then Section 559, and also 558.
USC 5.
Section 559.
Section 559.
And then look in the notes. That's in the back. That's all administrative procedure, how they're supposed to operate. And in the notes, it says that administrative procedures cannot operate to derogate the Constitution. It used to say it cannot operate to derogate a person's constitutional rights. They changed it a little bit there. With that 558, go ahead, Robert.
If you look in the Supreme Court, you'll find rulings where on many occasions the Supreme Court has ruled that driver's licenses for individuals, private, do not need a driver's license.
Now, the judge did agree with me on that. The judge agreed with me on that in the very beginning. And then I said, I have the right to travel, and I don't have to have a driver's license to travel. And he says, well, that I agree with. He said it right outright. And he says, that I agree with, but if you are going to travel on the public roadways in a motor vehicle, that has to be registered for safety reasons. And that was his excuse, was for safety reasons. And the prosecutor used that to the jury, and he said it's for safety reasons. And I explained to the jury that for financial gain reasons is why they wanted to do it.
What you have to do is challenge their constitutional authority by jurisdiction, that they have no authority to be telling you that in the first place. And then it goes from there. But now it's too late to do that. Although you can challenge jurisdiction at any point, even after a judgment. I don't know if you knew that or not. There's all sorts of jurisdiction.
I challenged it verbally in court, and of course I didn't file it in time. I didn't know we were going to jury trial that day. I thought I was going to get my reset, and they didn't. They were supposed to try another case, and that case didn't get tried, so they jumped over to mine. So I was unprepared.
I think you could file a paper that you're still challenging jurisdiction. So,
yeah, and, I think you're right. Just to have it in there with the appeal.
It cost about $400 in most states, but you should have gone ahead and gone into federal court with it. Once they've made a decision, then federal court will tell you you're just in there asking them to reverse the decision. But based on jurisdiction, you've got a chance at it. So. Because they're operating on statute law, which is, there's all kinds of case law that explains about the statutes are for the government. John Durish has said that they strictly are to control the operation of government agencies, not the people. And they, you know, they've gone way past that and are controlling our behavior, and there's nothing in the Constitution that gives them the authority or the power to do that. And, you know, you have to go at them from all the different angles that are possible. And when you're talking to a jury, you have to go at all the different angles. And rather than just say, you know, simply, I have constitutional rights.
Well, you also...
There's a prior restraint of stop. Stop versus Baxley says that prior restraint means constitutional laws where we had our freedoms have been taken away, they can't do that. And, you know, one good thing to do is point out, you know, when they had horses and covered wagons, our ancestors, they didn't have to have tags on those. So what's the deal in that prior restraint? You know, you put all that together and you start getting a jury to start realizing, you know, that we've all been turned into slaves. And that's when they might begin to think about, you know, voting in your favor.
Well, you also need to know that no legislature has authority to make law which controls we the people's behavior.
Huh. I'm writing that down.
They can pass no law, you know, that's contrary to the Constitution. That's supreme law of the land. So,
you know, I did mention that excerpt. I remember because I had a bunch of notes with me, and that was one of the things I did mention to the jury. And of course, that was, I remember that time was one of the many times that the prosecutor jumped up and kept saying objection. Misstating the law.
That's the favorite thing is they'll throw somebody off in their whole train of thought by just doing that objection crap on you over and over again. So
yeah, and they know they
have to ignore them and go on until the judge tells you the subject matter. You're gonna have to change it or something like that. So, but that's just a tactic. So
yeah, well, you know, I knew I was gonna learn from my experience. First trial, and I didn't expect to win in that one. That was the first time I actually took it all the way to the trial. The time I get him to draw before.
Yeah, first-hand information. That prosecutor went back to the jurors and actually made that one juror change his vote. I'd be thinking about, you know, making him a defendant in a lawsuit because he's violating your constitutional right to due process.
Yeah, I agree, and I think I just need to figure out how and what I can file to force them to give me the information on the jurors so I can contact those jurors and ask them.
Well, you just call them John Doe. You file a lawsuit and you call them John Doe or Jane Doe for the time being. And then when you get the case going, then you start asking to subpoena that information. See, what's going on with these statute laws that Robert said they have no authority to do those is they're prosecuting on that, and that is not due process. They're just, the whole court system is set up to where you're guilty, and that's what they did with that last juror, is he's guilty. And that's,
you know, and on record, this judge slipped up when he was in the beginning, and this is what I'm going to also put in the appeal and the judicial complaint that I'm filing online, because you can do it online now for free to file a judicial complaint against that judge in that court. And what he said was, he's telling everybody how things are going to go, and he says, you have to remember that Mr. Walker is presumed guilty. I mean, presumed. And I said, no, you had it right, Your Honor. You said what you meant to say. And he kind of laughed, and he says, no, he's presumed innocent until proven guilty. So he had a Freudian slip and said presumed guilty.
Presumed in a courtroom is anywhere around the word presume or presumption, that is a violation of due process. But I understand what you're saying. He's supposed to have said presumed innocent.
Yeah, and he slipped up because he knows that in his mind, and that's exactly what it is.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you? Before I fall asleep, I just wanted to tell you what everybody definitely needs to do pertaining to any of the court cases. You need anything you get from any attorney or judges or whatever, you file a grievance. You contact the Bar Association, you can get the grievance committee form either at the courthouse or online. And make sure you get an affidavit on the proof why you're writing a grievance, and they have to respond. Okay? As a matter of fact, I started doing the grievance on these attorneys because they falsified information, and the counsel, the chairperson for the Bar Association, he declined all mine, and I started, I think, 2014, 2015, which they were criminal because some of my stuff was falsified. So now what I'm going to do, which I just did it again when I went to court, I filed a grievance on the attorney who settled my case without my knowing, because that came out in my court. All righty. And I sent a sworn affidavit, and I have not yet heard from them. I contacted them, and I also, because what's going on in most of the courts, it's the same attorneys that are perpetrating the fraud. So if everybody writes a grievance, That's putting them on the hot seat. And what's happening in our state right now, I found out, is that a lot of these attorneys, trustees, attorneys, and judges, they're all now retiring. Okay? I have to go to court on Friday, and the person who's supposed to be my trustee attorney, now they're gone, so they put another young person in. Because I guess everybody's starting to slam them, and there's been so much falsified and no due process and no proof of claim that they are packing it in and they're getting out of here before, you know, because whatever they have. One of the other attorneys who had falsely imprisoned this person, I went down to City Hall, and I'm like, oh, my God, his office. It was like, I guess about four guys, four attorneys. The office is shut tight, and they're in foreclosure. So I guess now they're all starting to turn on each other. So everybody under National Liberty Alliance nationwide start filing the grievances on every one of the attorneys. They have to respond on the attorneys when you send it to the Bar Association, the Grievance Committee. And also, wait a minute, there's it's called... Wait a minute, it's called, I have it down to you, like, I'm not going down back down there.
What are we saying in the grievance? What exactly is our grievance going
to
be?
Exactly what they're doing to you. You know, they'll ask you the questions, is it bio, racial, whatever, you know. But just make sure whatever you check off, you've got to write what it's about, and you just stick to the facts. And, you know, you could send whatever documents. Like, for example, when I did this last grievance, it was about the attorney who settled my case without me knowing. And I put all their names and everything down there. But my attorney, the one who was supposed to be representing me, threw the case. And I found out because of this last case I had gone through. And I sent them a copy of that. You know, so in that case, it's called Claims Service. I believe it's called Claims Service Fund. And that's the insurance that every attorney has to take out. And if they find it in my favor, then they have to pay me and they go after the attorneys. And we've been having a few attorneys, I guess about 3 weeks ago, four attorneys got arrested. And another thing what they're doing to these attorneys, we found out, they are changing people's documents on illegal foreclosures, such as, you know, when you go to court and for the eviction, they, on Saturdays, they will sit there and change the date like it went to the court. And you go back to the court and say, well, this, where's my belongings or this and that? They said, you didn't go into foreclosure. Same thing for eviction. I found four people already with illegal evictions because the attorneys and the marshals serve the papers, and it's like it's between the, right, so it wasn't even on the court record. So two of the people lost all their belongings, and nobody kept, you know what I'm saying? So they're committing so much criminal stuff. And also, I told you about American Greed. I said it was on CNN. What is it? I said MSNBC. It's on the... I'll give you the other channel. Cause they, let me...
We need to finish up because we're at the end of our hour.
Okay, but it's on... It's on CNBCH. That's the channel American Greed's on also. It's CNBCH.
Yeah, I've heard of the American Greed, so I've been wanting to look at it. I haven't gotten through it yet.
It's all about our cases, the kidnapping and all that stuff. But make sure everyone starts right in the grievances on these attorneys and also even on the judges. And
well, the judge is an attorney, so it's the same thing. The judge is an attorney himself.
But the judges, you got to write it to the judicial bar and the grievance on their contract. Okay.
Which is what
that's
I'm doing
what
in my case. But I'm going to do it for the, now that you told me that, I'm going to do that grievance for the attorney as well.
Absolutely.
All
everybody.
Right.
Any debt. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks. It's been a pleasure being here this evening and chatting and learning. And we must close the call down now, but thank you all for being here, and I look forward to seeing you next week. All right, thank you all.
Yeah, have a good night.
Night.
Good night.